So there's two related points of view. One is deformation, quantization. And the second is, it's called geometric quantization. So, you know, when we have a quantum mechanical system, typically we have some algebra of operators and some Hilbert space in which it acts. So deformation quantization produces the algebra of operators, and geometric quantization will produce the Hilbert space. So deformation quantization is easier. For example, on R2, we can quantize the algebra functions which is generated by P and Q. Just by declaring that PQ is equal to H bar. So basically, we're replacing the Poisson bracket by the commutator. So you can ask, firstly, of course, this is the standard canonical quantization. So we'd like to formalize what it means to do something like this on a general symplectic manifold. And we'd also like to say, I've told you what the commutator of P and Q is, but if you give me some other, you know, function of P and Q, and I take their commutator, what do we get on the right-hand side? So in general, so if M is any symplectic manifold, say a star product on M is a way of multiplying functions so I take F, G, which are functions on M, smooth functions, and the star product is something like F star G, F G plus H bar . So it's a new product, which change. You know, initially I have the usual way of multiplying functions. I just evaluate them at a point, and you know, I just multiply their values. This is the kind of classical way, and the star product is a new product whose first order correction is the Poisson bracket. But then there's terms of all order. And we want this to satisfy some nice properties. This is associative. At each order in H-bar, I take like the nth order term. Well, I'm going to typically find the following pattern. So the leading term, I'm just taking the product, and that doesn't involve any derivatives. But the next term, I'm differentiating f once and g once, because the Poisson bracket involves some derivatives. So as we go further out, we're going to have more and more derivatives. So we can say this only say involves up to some number. I said 2n because that kind of fits the pattern, but actually the precise number is not important. So what's the meaning of this? So a deformation quantization of M is equal to the choice of a star product and functions on M with the star product should be thought of as operators in the quantum system. We get by quantizing the classical system. OK, any questions about this idea? Yeah?
Sorry, why is it 2n derivatives again?
Well, the intuition is 0 derivatives, 2 derivatives in total, one on each function.
Oh, that's weird. I thought you meant the order of the derivatives. OK, so you mean the number of derivatives.
Yeah, so this is going to look like some kind of d, 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 f, d, 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 g, with some tensor. Some tensor contracting all the indices. Well, looks like that kind of thing. And maybe, and this tensor is a tensor field, can depend on which point you are on the manifold. And then this equation is like some kind of very complicated equation for this infinite sequence of tensor fields.
So you also require that f star g minus g star f is equal to?
Is which?
F star g minus g star f is equal to the plus sum.
That's only going to hold a leading order.
Okay.
So. So you can see that if I take and just do naive canonical computation relations, the commutator of p squared and q squared, it has a term which is the Poisson bracket, but it has also another term where I've contracted all p's with all q's, and that's a second order term. Okay, so on or to, there is a formula for the star product. It's called the Moyle product. Let me make sure I get this right. Sorry, I need to look at my notes to get this one right. Yeah, here it goes. I want to write it in the following way. I'm going to take F, P1, Q1. More room. I'm going to pretend that these are depend on separate sets of variables. I'm going to hit it with an exponential. Looks like that. And then I'm going to restrict to Q1 equals P2, Q1 equals Q2. Okay. So I hope this expression makes reasonable sense. I make them depend on separate sets of variables, and I hit them with some derivatives. Where here, when I differentiate f by P1, I differentiate g by the canonical commutator. The canonical joule variable, and similarly here. And then at the end, after I've done all these derivatives, I set P1 and P2 to be the same. So this formula is on Wikipedia. So let's work it out. The first couple of terms. First term is just a product, because I have no derivatives. So the second term, I have a h bar, and I'm going to have differentiate each one. Actually, this should be a minus, shouldn't it? Yeah, that's a minus. And there's another term, which is kind of something more complicated, with the various indices and the derivatives contracted in some way using the symplectic form. And you can see it how to do this by looking at this expression. I mean, basically, there's four terms because I'm squaring something with two terms. Okay, so I hope this answers your some of the earlier questions, like why. I hope it's reasonably clear we're going to need these higher derivative terms to make it associative. Okay, any questions about this? Okay, so there's the following theorem of Fedosov, that there exists a star product on any symplectic manifold. Now, it's not going to be unique. There's going to be many different ways of quantizing your given classical system, but there is at least, one. So let's, to get a feel for what's going on, let's study some other examples. Suppose we have four times S1, so with coordinates P and Q, where Q is equivalent to Q plus 1. So then, the classical algebra has generators by P and capital Q, which is E to the 2 pi I little Q. So we need this because little Q is not a function of the circle, but its exponential is. So if we quantize, so that PQ is equal to 1, then we find the following relation. PQ is e to the 2 pi I h bar. Times Q. Okay. I don't know if it's worth explaining why this relation is a consequence of this relation. So this should be a h bar. Is it reasonably clear? Or should I? Maybe let me explain it. Basically, the point is like P goes like h bar d by dq, and then what am I saying? No e. I'm an idiot. Got it backwards. Sorry about that. That was very dumb. And so the commutator with P acts like. The commutator with P removes a Q, so it acts like H bar D by DQ. H bar D by DQ. And there's a 2 pi I here. Okay, so sorry for those typos. Okay, so this is another pretty simple example. So let's look at one more example for now. Before I say a little bit about the other way of quantizing, which is geometric quantization. Let's consider the circle times the circle. So coordinates are P and Q, and P is equivalent to P plus 1, and Q is equivalent to Q plus 1. And the symplectic form is A dP dQ, where A is the area of the torus. So we can picture this like this. I have some rectangular region. I've chosen coordinates so that these 1, 0, 1, 1, 0, 1.
So the, what's the brackets there? Like difference of two star products?
Yeah.
Okay.
This is so to get this relation. All I'm using is associativity. Without actually bothering to write down the general formula. Okay. Any other questions? Okay, so in the case of this torus, what do we find? So the Poisson bracket is 1 over the area. Because the Poisson tensor is the inverse to the symplectic tensor, and the symplectic tensor has an area in it. So the canonical commutation relations are going to be like PQ is 1 over the area. Sorry, rather, H bar over the area. And I'm going to take capital P, e to the 2 pi, I have little p, capital Q, e to the 2 pi I of little q, and we want to figure out the commutation relations between these guys. Well, it turns out the relation is pq is equal to qp times some exponential factor, which is to make this exponential factor look nice, I'm going to stick in a 2 pi I here. Nobody objects. So in all of the other cases we considered, I can just change p by a factor to absorb any constant over there. But here, because p has this periodicity, I can't do that anymore. So the actual number here is important. So it's convenient to have these conventions. And if you work it out, I'm going to get e to h bar over times 2 pi I over the area. Okay. So it's often convenient to absorb h bar into the area, so it becomes so from this perspective, large area is a classical limit. so I wanted to write down this example and this formula because we're going to use it later. And let's see, something else to say. This example is a little weird because, okay, totally reasonable that the position of my particle is periodic. It's a particle moving on the circle. But here, the momentum of my particle is also periodic. So this is a kind of very strange quantum system. But, it really does arise, and it's a really useful class of quantum systems, these ones with a finite dimensional area, and a finite area. OK, so now let's talk about geometric quantization, unless there's any other questions.
The hyperspace would be any representation of these algebra functions?
You don't want to have any representation, right? Because you want to have, if I take ordinary quantum mechanics, the algebra of operators is generated by P and Q, but the Hilbert space is just going to be functions of P or functions of Q, which are related by Fourier transform. So you don't want to have, I mean, the algebra itself is a representation. But that's much too big to be thought of as the Hilbert space of the system. So you want to have as small as possible representation. In these examples, where the phase space has finite area, there's roughly one state per unit of area. So the Hilbert state will be of dimension n. This is, for example, how one finds things like a qubit. Starting again on OR2 with canonical commutation relations like this, the usual Hilbert space is functions of Q, where P acts by h bar d by dq. Of course, we could have also, we could take functions of P, where Q acts by minus h bar d by dp, and a function of P of Q gets sent by the Fourier transform to a function of P, and the Fourier transform intertwines the action. So maybe strictly speaking, there should be some h bar inserted into the Fourier kernel to make this work. But you know, if I multiply this by q, then when I'm on the Fourier dual side, I'm differentiating. And similarly, if I multiply here on this side, I'm differentiating so that the q. So because the Fourier transform switches the role of differentiation and multiplication, it intertwines the action of this algebra. So this picture tells us it doesn't actually matter which space we chose. So we'd like to generalize this. We'd like to generalize this to an arbitrary symplectic manifold. And we'd like to say that the Hilbert space is going to be, roughly speaking, functions of half the number of variables. Here I started with two variables, the Hilbert space was functions of one variable. So we need to kind of pin down what we mean by half the number of variables. If M is a symplectic manifold, I want to say the following. A Lagrangian submanifold which is of dimension 2n is a submanifold of dimension n satisfying the following equivalent conditions. So firstly, one way to say it is that the symplectic form restricted to L is 0. Or another way to say it is there exists a local coordinate choice with these pi, qi coordinates, or the symplectic form is some dpi wedge dqi, and the Lagrangian is the set where the pi's equal 0. So locally, it looks just like the locus where half of the variables vanish. A Lagrangian submanifold is a pretty good way of kind of capturing this. We have half the variables, but it turns out not to be exactly correct. And the correct way to capture the familiar Hilbert space quantum mechanics is via a related notion called a Lagrangian foliation. Lagrangian foliation is a map M to N plus pi, where M is symplectic of dimension 2n. N is of dimension n. Pi is, as this technical definition, it's called a submersion, i.e., the matrix of partials is of rank n everywhere. And the key condition, each fiber is Lagrangian. Okay, so from the Lagrangian foliation, we're going to build a correct Hilbert space. For example, the map from R2 to R sending P, Q to Q is a Lagrangian foliation. So this is kind of the first approximation. This will require corrections. The Hilbert space of the quantum system is functions on n when we have a Lagrangian foliation. Okay, this is a slightly weird and kind of subtle notion. We're going to spend a little bit of time trying to unpack it, the rest of today and the next lecture. But I hope it's clear that what it's trying to capture is, in ordinary quantum mechanics, we want the Hilbert space to be functions just of position. And we're trying to do something similar here by dividing our coordinates into those coordinates on the base and those in the fiber. And we want to look at functions which don't depend on the fibers. So I'll give you, we'll go through the example of like S1 times OR in a second. But are there any questions about this idea? Yeah?
Is it the same as saying M is a fiber bundle, fiber?
Yes. Yeah, I didn't. That's the submersion statement says that. I just wasn't sure you guys knew that terminology. In fact, this can be relaxed a little bit, but it's possible to do the same thing when you get some singular fibers. So. Probably a more general definition, which would still work, is to ask that almost all of the fibers are Lagrangians. But sometimes, on some codimension one locus in the base, these Lagrangians might become singular or something like that. So let's see what happens when, in the case when position is periodic, but momentum is not. PQ coordinates and omega is dp wedge dq. So the map, or times S1, or sending P, Q to P is a Lagrangian foliation. So we should think that the Hilbert space, take that back up. There's obviously two maps. I want to look at this one. The map where I project onto the P coordinate is more subtle, and we'll discuss that later. So the Hilbert space should be equal to functions of Q so, which are, of course, necessarily they're periodic. So a basis is given by Q to the n e to the 2 pi I n of Q. So there's a discrete, the Hilbert space is a discrete basis. And P should act by h bar d by dq h bar 2 pi I okay so m q to the n is an eigenvalue. An eigenvector, sorry. It's a state with specific momentum. And if we introduce a Hamiltonian, if the Hamiltonian was P squared, then Q to the n is again an eigenvector. With eigenvalue minus h bar squared by n squared. Okay. So in order for this notion to work, that we should, you know, in our initial example of quantum mechanics, we said we could look at functions of position, or functions of momentum, and by the Fourier transform, we're going to get the same answer. Now let's think about, is that going to work here? And we'll see that it doesn't, and that's going to lead to a correction to our definition. So functions of position, they're periodic. And when I Fourier transform, I get a kind of discrete lattice of Fourier modes. Whereas functions of momentum, they're continuous. And it looks like I'm seeing all the continuous Fourier modes. So something funny is going on. It looks like I get a different Hilbert space if I choose a different polarization.
So you said you get a different Hilbert space if you choose a different?
It appears, yes. Yeah, like that.
What is different? I didn't hear the word. Polarization.
Different polarization. This Lagrangian foliation is sometimes called a polarization.
Polarization.
if we use map R times S1 to OR, there's a problem. The Hilbert space appears to be all functions of p, but only the delta function when p is an integer, only those guys should appear. Maybe an integer times h bar or something like that. As these are Fourier dual, so we better figure this out, because if we want to treat the Hilbert space of S1 times S1, we're always going to run into something similar. The issue arises because when I do this kind of thing, I'm kind of treating this as position and the circle as momentum. Whatever it lives in the fibers plays the role of momentum. And we're in this funny situation where momentum is quantized, or momentum, sorry, is periodic. Well, so it turns out our definition of the Hilbert space needs to be corrected. We shouldn't look at all functions on the base. We should only look at those points on the base which are what is called Bohr-Sommerfeld orbits. So I'll state this briefly, and I'll try to explain it a little more next time. But as the name suggests, the Bohr-Sommerfeld orbits date way back to the very early treatments of quantum mechanics. I think they even arose when Bohr was computing like the spectrum of an electron and seeing the different shells in an atom. He found this discrete thing appearing. And I think it's the same phenomenon. So let's assume that my symplectic form is exact. Alpha is a one form. And this is my foliation, Lagrangian foliation. And we also assume that the fibers are compact, because that's really the only, well, actually, let's not assume that. We don't even need it. And we say a point in the base is a Bohr-Sommerfeld orbit. If for all maps gamma, for all circles which live in the inverse image of n, so for I'll draw a little picture here. This is n. n. And over this point, there's some manifold. Maybe it looks like this. And that little circle I've tried to draw is gamma. So for all circles which live over this point, the integral, the exponential of 2 pi I times the integral of gamma of alpha is 1. This is a slightly puzzling condition at first, but I hope we can get to the bottom of it. If you know a little more kind of math, what I'm asking is that equivalently, alpha, which is a cohomology class of alpha in pi inverse of n, is 0. Not that it's 0, that it's actually an integer cohomology class. It's equivalent condition. We hope we can expand more on why this weird condition appears. But if you remember our discussion yesterday, we said, well, given the Hamiltonian system, we can try to build a Lagrangian system where the field was a path moving in this manifold, moving in the phase space. And this was one of the terms in the action. So this exponential is like literally one of the terms that I would have in the path integral when I'm studying that Lagrangian system. OK. So the correct Hilbert space is then functions on the set of these guys. Okay, so let's see how this works here and how this solves this problem. And I'm probably off by some factors of h bar and the exponentials here and there. So you don't worry about that. So if I look at this, Lagrangian foliation, pq goes to p, then, well, the symplectic form is dp dq. So alpha, the only reasonable choice for alpha is p dq, because I can't have q dp, because q is periodic. P dq, I'm going to go over here. For a point p and or, the integral over s1 p dq, well, that's just p. So the Bohr-Sommerfeld condition is that p is an integer. Because you want e to the 2 pi I times this integral to be 1. So this solves the problem. We look at the Bohr-Sommerfeld orbits, the correct Fourier duality is restored, and the Hilbert space is independent of the polarization. Now, the Bohr-Sommerfeld condition itself, so far, is slightly mystical and is not clear where it comes from. Okay.
So that torus you're drawing in the picture is supposed to be the total space?
Oh, I'm imagining this torus is the fiber in some very general example, high dimensional example.
Oh, okay, so we're not looking at the example where it was r times s1.
Yeah, I wanted to give like the general definition for any manifold, And then here restrict to the over times S1 example.
So this method of looking at the Bohr-sum of both orbits, so you're telling, so this is basically saying that the Hilbert space that you construct is independent of the foliation that you choose.
I mean, if you try to say that in the most generality, I don't think anybody actually knows.
Right.
But just like in these kind of simple examples where you need to get your hands on things, yes.
Yeah, because like I can choose any. There's lots of Lagrangian submanifolds I can choose, right?
Exactly. But you know, it's nice to see it in the case of the two torus, right? Because two torus I can foliate it this way, I can foliate it that way. Or you can also kind of choose diagonal lines.
Yeah.
As long as their slope was not too bad, so that it was a nice foliation. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then you'll find that the Hilbert space is always the same, and always of dimension the area. But actually, this is slightly tricky because we'll have to get to this another time. In this example of the two torus, the symplectic form is not d over 1 form. So we have to generalize slightly further to be able to treat this example. Oh, maybe, I know we're out of time, but there's one more fun thing. If here the integral of alpha goes going from one orbit to the next orbit, it's going to increase by 1. And of course, the integral of alpha here minus here is the integral of the symplectic form along the cylinder by Stokes' theorem. So this already we can see from this Bohr-Sommerfeld picture that like in this cylinder, each region of the cylinder of the unit area carries a single state. Because when I add one state when I move from one orbit to the next orbit, and then I'm increasing it by area 1. So that's a general feature.
So this is for this specific manifold, right? For R plus S, or is it something?
This picture here?
Yeah.
Yeah, or times S1.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In general, can we also say something in general, like about any?
Yeah, I mean, on any manifold, the size of the Hilbert space is roughly the area. I mean, there's a more precise statement. Like as the size of my symplectic manifold gets big, that's the leading term in the expansion, and there are subleading terms.